My name is Hallie Knipp. I'm a graduate student working with Special Collections and Archives here at Clemson University. I'm here today, June 7th, 2023, with Dr. John Peck. He goes by Jack. Today, we'll be discussing the formation of Clemson's Computer Science Department. Dr. Peck, do I have your permission to record this interview?
Yes, you do.
All right, thank you. Okay. All right, so we will just get started. Can you tell me a little bit how you came to Clemson in the first place?
Sure. I was at the University of Southwestern Louisiana, now the University of Louisiana. I had just obtained my doctorate degree, really in mathematics slash computer science. They had a combined program there. I had a good friend who was a graduate student in math sciences here at Clemson. Talked to him. He said, I believe there might be an opening in computer science here. So I contacted the department chair, a gentleman named John Keneally, who, as a matter of fact, used to be at the University of Southwestern Louisiana as a faculty member. And I never had a class with him when he was in Louisiana, but I did know of him. And so I called him and found out there was a position open and that I should come for an interview. But he said, interestingly enough, the dean of sciences happens to be in Lafayette, my hometown where I was at the time, visiting his Uncle Ralph. So why don't you go have breakfast with him? So I had breakfast with the dean. That went well. They invited me to come for an interview. I did. Made me an offer. I accepted it. This was actually in the fall of 1970. They wanted me to come at the beginning of the semester in 1971, in January, when things were going to kick off here at Clemson. But the semester ended about the middle of January in Louisiana, and I was on the faculty there at the time. And so I couldn't leave at the, before finishing the semester. So I said, well, I can't really come, when you want me to. And they said, well, I'll tell you what, why don't you just come when the semester finishes and you won't have to teach anything the first semester because it would already started here at Clemson. Mm-hmm. But rather, we'll give you a joint appointment between the computer, between the math sciences department and the computer center.
Okay.
And so I had a joint appointment. So I came and I worked mainly at the computer center, understanding what was going on computing-wise on the campus. Developed the payroll system, as a matter of fact, for Clemson at the time and a few other systems. Kind of got my feet on the ground relative to the community and all. And then started teaching really about half-time. Half-time then was 6 hours a semester, computer science courses. There were no other computer science faculty members.
You were the only one.
I was the first one.
Okay.
There were two other gentlemen who were really numerical analysts that did a little computing, but they really weren't computer science people themselves. They were mathematicians who used the computer.
Right.
That's how I got to Clemson.
This isn't on my list, but I would love to hear what the distinction is between a computer scientist and a mathematician who computes.
Sure. Well, mathematics certainly uses computers for a lot of the work, particularly applied work, numerical analysis and that type thing. Computer science is much broader than that. Computer science, as we realize today, more so than back in those days, is used in a lot of different fields. Matter of fact, my doctorate degree was a combination of mathematics, computer science, and petroleum engineering.
Oh, my. Okay.
And so a little unusual. But today, of course, you find computers in every field. And so we felt if you were going to be constrained to only mathematics, in fact, this goes to speaks towards some of the things we'll talk about in just a minute, then you were probably not, really doing the students full justice in terms of what they might want to study in terms of computer science.
Okay, that makes sense. Thank you for expanding on that. So you grew up in Lafayette, Louisiana?
Yes, I did.
Can you tell me a little bit about that?
I was, I moved there like in the fourth grade. South Louisiana is heavily Cajun. I was the only one in my high school graduating class of 33 that couldn't speak French as a first language. In any event, I went to the local school. My father died when I started college in 18, when I was 18. So I had to support my mother and my little sister, as well as go to school.
Oh my.
Fortunately, I did have a scholarship, an academic scholarship, which paid, I think it was $30 a semester toward my tuition. And also had me work 20 hours a week, primarily in what they call the math lab. That okay. is assisting students in kind of a tutoring capacity
okay.
While I went to school. And I had a variety of jobs while I worked unloading boxcars, and I was a lifeguard at times, and all sorts of different things during my 4 years as an undergraduate. Then I went to graduate school toward my master's degree at the University of Pennsylvania. My mother got very, very sick, was in the hospital. I had to come back. And so I finished my doctorate degree at the University of Southwest Louisiana.
Okay, so you started at University of Pennsylvania for grad school and
then
came back.
Yes, that's right.
Where did you do your undergraduate?
Undergraduate was done at the University of Southwestern Louisiana.
Okay. All right, just wanted to...
Yeah, that was a mathematics major, because computer science wasn't available.
Right. So speaking of that, what attracted you to mathematics in the first place?
Some people say because I'm lazy. You know, you don't have to memorize a lot of things, you have to figure them out.
Okay.
And so I actually started out in pre-med.
Okay.
And then changed over to mathematics after a semester or two of not being able to look at blood. And so I then went ahead and had 72 hours, as a matter of fact, of mathematics when I graduated as an undergraduate. So I almost had a master's degree as well.
Oh my. So were you just naturally adept at math, or was
I found it fairly easy.
Okay.
And enjoyable, you know, proving things. And so I did a lot of work during the summers, as a matter of fact. I worked for Dow Chemical, Shell Oil Company, which is, you know, oil business in Louisiana is pretty hot.
Yeah, I'd imagine.
And so I worked for Dow Chemical and did a lot of work and used a lot of mathematics, actually, in their accounting departments. Did some things they had never thought of doing with mathematics and computers, both.
So at what point did this interest in math kind of shift over to computer science?
Actually, when I was about a junior in college, I took a computer course. It wasn't called computer science back then. And as it worked out, the dean of the graduate school was very interested in computers and went ahead and secured the first computer, an IBM 1620, in the state, in education anyway. And so I got my teeth cut on that particular machine, did a lot of interesting things, and that's one of the things I did at Dow Chemical was I wrote their complete payroll system for Dow Chemical. I wrote their standard costing system and several other things as an undergraduate.
Do you remember about what year that was?
Yeah, that was probably in 1965.
Oh, wow, so early.
Good bit before you were born.
Just a little bit. Okay, thank you so much. I'm going to get into the computer science questions
sure,
now.
Sure, please do.
So can you tell me a little bit about your work with the Computer Center?
Yeah, the Computer Center, I did a variety of things. I did, like I said, the payroll system for Clemson, which they ran for many years. Then the dean of the graduate school, Dr. Schwartz, he was the dean of graduate school and research. They had a dual title at the time. Got me interested in some things that were going on at the state level, as well as the Department of Health and Environmental Control. I did a system for them with a lot of graduate students, I might add, in math sciences, where we were tied together all of the state agencies that had to do with healthcare,
mm-hmm.
you know, mental health, public health. And so when you went to one of these agencies and put all your information in, you didn't have to start all over at the next agency. Like one could refer them to the other.
Okay.
It was called CIRSS, Cooperative Interagency Referral System. And so we did that on kind of an experimental basis, so with real-time, you know, systems and terminals tied into central databases and all that type thing. Did work for the Department of DHEC, continued additional work, and I did things for social services. We did the Medicaid system for the state, Title 4D, food stamps, many other programs for that agency, as well as mental health. We did the complete administrative system for Lander College, and that was part of a group that I had started called the Department of Information Systems Development, DISD.
Mm-hmm.
It's still going on today, as a matter of fact, at
wow.
Clemson. They've had numerous people, I'm sure, in and out of that organization. And they used, at the time anyway, a lot of graduate student labor. In fact, an interesting story, the Medicaid system, we did, I guess it was probably about 1978, that time frame, mm-hmm. for the entire state. There were four of us who did it. And we did it in about 8 or 9 months.
Wow. Wow, for the entire state.
For the Medicaid system, and as a result of it was certified with a certified Medicaid system, you got a 75-25 match from the federal government in terms of funding versus 50-50. So there was a lot of money for the state. Interestingly enough, about a year and a half, maybe 2 years ago, I ran into a gentleman who had actually been a computer science student of mine many years earlier, and that system's still going on at Clemson today.
Oh, my word.
There were four of us who wrote it. There are 40 people maintaining it now. And so I was shocked. You mean that system's still running? Yeah, same system.
That's
so
incredible.
I was really shocked. But computer science, the way it really got started, right? Like I said, it was started in math sciences.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I used to do in math sciences is take a trip to Louisiana recruiting graduate students. And this lasted about a week and a half, 2 weeks. I've got a state car, drive down there and hit all the schools,
right?
Pretty much the larger schools in the state, many of them private and public both, and give them a little talk and try to convince people to come to Clemson to math sciences, the graduate program. That was pretty successful. Over half the graduate students 1 year, I recall, were from Louisiana. They were in math sciences. We also employed through the DISD program that I mentioned earlier, employed about 20 graduate students.
Wow.
Again, they're assistantships. We're developing systems for the state, which is very successful. It's an interesting story of Dr. Edwards, who was the president at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Edwards went to the governor's office. And as it works out, we had done a good bit of work for the governor's office as well. Dr. Edwards was unaware of that. And so he goes into the governor's office, and I guess he was waiting in the outside lobby or something. I was told this story by him. And he was waiting in the outside room. They're waiting to go see the governor. And the governor's assistant, secretary, whatever, was there typing on a computer terminal, which there were no computer terminals back in those days.
Right.
He said, "What is that?" She says, "Well, I'm doing some information. He's entering some data here into this system." He said, "That's really neat." He says, "What computer are you tied into?" She said, "Oh, Clemson." And so he said, "Clemson?" So he was unaware of some of the things going on. So he became real interested. So as a result of that, he called me in, and Dr. Schwartz, the dean of the graduate school, we called us in and we talked and told him what we're doing, not only for the governor's office, but many other agencies around the state.
Right.
So he became extremely interested in what we were doing and real supporter. And I used to take trips down to Columbia with Dr. Edwards fairly often and talk to some of the state agencies and see what we're doing, that type of thing. And so on one of those trips, he started asking questions about computer science. And I told him that, it's in math sciences, which kind of constrains a little bit the types of computer science, for example, database systems, which is really getting big.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really not a math subject.
Right.
And so he said, "What do you think we ought to do?" And I said, "Well, in the future, we ought to look toward getting a separate department, quite honestly." And so he said, "Well, we'll make it happen." And so he talked to the head of the math department, John Keneally, and John put together a task force within math science to see if we should, and if we should, how we could separate computer science into a separate department from math sciences. And so that was about 1978, 79 timeframe. And that wasn't at all pleasant. There were some really heated discussions because a lot of the students wanted to study computer science. And of course, that would have left math sciences with probably a much lower number of graduate students.
Right.
As it works out, that worked out just fine for both groups, because math, there's still a lot of students and very good students who want to study mathematics and not computer science, and that's fine. They ought to. But it's worked out, so that was the start of the computer science department. This is about 1979.
Well, that was my next question, is could you tell me a little bit about the formation of,
sure,
of the department?
Well, during the period after I was hired in 71, until the separation, which was about 78, 79 timeframe, there was, we hired, as I recall, I might not have this exactly right, but Joe Turner,
mm-hmm,
who turned out to be the first department chair.
I'm interviewing him next week.
Okay, good. You'll have to check my notes against his. But it's kind of interesting. Joe was the second one coming in.
Okay.
And as a matter of fact, interesting story, I picked Joe up for an interview. He was from Maryland. Picked him up for an interview at the airport, and he interviewed on campus and all, and after a day or so, I was taking him back to the airport when the car ran out of gas.
Oh, no.
somebody had a state car that they had used, and they said, "Hey, use this car." So I used it, not paying attention to the gas gauge, which I should have done. Anyway, so, but we managed to get him there on time anyway. But in any event, Joe is the second faculty member. Then I think maybe Mike Westall might have been the third, Harold Grossman and Wayne Madison. Those were the initial set of math science faculty members who actually became the nucleus of the faculty in computer science.
Okay. So you mentioned that there were some heated discussions around the formation of the new department.
I understand it. You know, I was more interested in what was best for the students rather than best for me or any other faculty member. That was my goal, is to see that the students who said, I want to study computer science, were given that opportunity.
Right.
And so there were some heated discussions because naturally some of the faculty members who are more pure mathematics rather than applied were concerned that they were not going to have enough students to teach the courses they wanted to teach.
Right.
And I'm sure that, and I, like I said, I can understand that. But again, you have to kind of look to the future and see what's best and take a few bruises along the way in getting to where you and the students both need to be. So it's worked out that separation was just fine.
Good, good. We've jumped around a little bit. Can you tell me a little bit, did the work you did with the Computer Center influence your teaching and the design of the curriculum for the Computer Science Department?
Yes, and of course, the computer field has changed so fast even today.
Yeah.
You know, you hear all the artificial intelligence and the good and the bad and fears and all sorts of stuff, but the field is changing very, very quickly. It was even changing very quickly back then. So I tell people that I don't think I ever taught a course at Clemson that I took as a graduate student.
Okay.
Everything was new courses. So mm-hmm. As a computer science faculty member, you have to study new languages, you know, database systems, algorithms. You know, there's a lot of stuff that I never took as a graduate student that over the years I taught, you know, as the field continued to grow and change. So it was a challenge, and it still is a challenge for the existing faculty members. There's no question about that.
Yeah, of course. I'm just curious, what were the programming languages like when you were a grad student versus when you were a faculty member?
Fortran was the first course that was taught in computer science here.
Okay.
I'll say computer, math science. And the reason was that Fortran was still popular, first of all. And secondly, it was the language which is probably, at the time, was best suited to mathematical applications. We started teaching assembler language on the mainframe because there were no microcomputers at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And there was just one big computer sitting over there in the plant and animal science building in the basement. COBOL was introduced at that time. Assembler language was introduced, and I taught all of those courses. There's a course in, I think, data structures came on after a little bit of time and continued to develop from the freshman level on through the senior level. You know, operating systems, compiler construction, and those type things were courses which were taught after a few years as students continued to grow in the curriculum. And of course, there's database systems ended up being my kind of specialty over the years as I continued as a faculty member.
Okay, and databases were kind of what you had been working on previously.
Well, I never took a database course, like I said, but when I was doing a lot of work for the state,
right,
databases were just coming into practice. And one of the more popular ones was a system called IDMS. It was really conceived and initially defined by a gentleman who was pretty well known in the field, but then it was implemented by a fellow from B.F. Goodrich, who I got to know pretty well. And IDMS was one of the earlier implementations of what they call the network model. And so we got IDMS as a product. We installed it here, used it for all the state agencies that we worked with. I became part of the IDMS technical advisory committee and worked with the vendor to do new things with the product and the developers. So I got pretty close to them. And so we had some inroads into the product and the company that a lot of other people didn't, which is to our advantage. And in fact, there was a scholarship that was endowed by Cullinane Corporation And I think it's still here, which funds, I think, $5,000 a year, something like that, to a student. And so that was one of the first things we did in terms of having any kind of a support directly for computer science students.
Wow. So kind of jumping forward a little bit, can you tell me about the work you did with the Defense Department in the 80s?
Yeah, did get a good bit of work for the Air Force. It was kind of funny now, but it was called, you know, Computing, I think, 2000, which this is before 2000. You know, where will we be? So I did a lot of work with the Air Force in terms of supply chains and that type of thing that they were interested in. Did a lot of work for the Department of Defense. As it works out, during the summers as a faculty member, there weren't a lot of teaching opportunities, so I used to do a lot of consulting during the summers to make ends meet, send my kids to school. To college. So I did a lot of work in apparel manufacturing, the computer applications of apparel manufacturing.
Okay.
Tracking work as it goes through the apparel plant, making sure that, you know, you had the collars and the sleeves and the fronts all at the same time when you wanted to join them together into a finished garment. If you have a bunch of collars but don't have the sleeves ready, you know, can't make a shirt, you know. And so anyway, so the Defense Department was very concerned about the apparel industry moving offshore.
Mm-hmm.
You really don't want to go to China for your chemical protective suits.
Right.
And so there's something called the Berry Amendment that says any apparel products that are made in the U.S., the military must buy them from U.S. suppliers.
Okay.
So the Defense Department was interested in keeping the industry alive. And the way to do that is to have more technology. You know, we can't compete against third world countries on wages.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of like water is going to run downhill. If there's a lot of labor involved in manufacturing, it's going to go to a country that has low labor rates.
Right.
And so apparel was one of those manufacturing applications that had a lot of labor, still does. And so so there was a solicitation that was put out by the Defense Department, actually by the part of the Defense Department that does a lot of procurements of tanks and military. And in fact, it was DSCP in Philadelphia, the Defense Supply Center Philadelphia, was a group that put it together. Defense Logistics Agency is the group that's above them. They're part of the Defense Logistics Agency. In any event, I found out about the solicitation. Since I'd had a lot of apparel manufacturing experience, particularly computers and advanced technologies, I contacted the people over in textiles and said, hey, are you guys interested? Well, at the time, the person who actually ended up working with me on the thing was Chris Jarvis. I think she's Chris Cole now. But so she was on sabbatical that year. So she came back about the time we were really putting together the proposal to the Defense Department. And so we worked together along with some of my contacts that I had in industry to put together a proposal, and we were funded. They funded three groups in the U.S., four groups, actually, I think. It was Auburn, us, the Fashion Institute of Technology, and University of California, one of the branch campuses near Ontario. Well, I forgot, Pomona or something. Anyway, we were four groups funded, and so we were the only one that survived after a few years. And so that effort continued until probably 2005, maybe. I retired in 2000. So it continued on for 5 years after I retired even. But and Chris Jarvis ran the, Chris Cole ran that operation. I was more interested in the research, and she was more interested in the administration.
And so was that a joint effort with the textile engineering?
Correct. No, it was it wasn't textile engineering. Well, at the time, they didn't have textile engineering as such. They just had textiles.
Okay.
And so she came out of Texas. She was actually a chemistry graduate from MIT.
Oh, wow.
And then had done some work in textiles herself, and so actually joined the textile department. We worked together very closely, computer science and textiles, in that effort. And again, funded a whole bunch of assistantships on both sides, mainly computer science assistants. So, in fact, two of my best students I ever had, two students from India, actually worked on projects there and got their master's degree associated with the projects. One of them, when I had got his doctorate degree here at Clemson as well. But one of them, the interesting story, Satish Dhamaraj, got his master's degree. He went to work for a company in Pittsburgh and then moved around a little bit, ended up in San Francisco. My son was in San Francisco at the time in Silicon Valley. He's a computer engineer. And so went out to visit my son. And so we said, hey, let's have dinner with Satish. So we did. And Satish said, hey, I'm thinking of forming a company and developing my own products. I said, Satish, that's really interesting. What is it? So he told me a little bit about it. It was some really good ideas, but there's more to starting a company than just having a good idea. Right. And so I said, well, kind of good luck. Well, I think it was, I don't know, 3 or 4 years later, he sold his company to Yahoo. For what I heard was like $650 million.
Oh, my word.
Now, he didn't own all of the company, don't get me wrong, but he was a... it might have been $450 million, but anyway, a whole lot of money.
More money than I will ever see.
In any event, they ended up selling his company to Yahoo, and apparently made a good bit of money himself. So he was. They had a lot of funding from a venture capital called Redpoint Ventures out in California, and Redpoint was impressed with him. They hired him to work for them after that. And now he's the president of Redpoint Ventures.
Oh, my gosh.
Which is still doing a lot of venture capital investments. And interestingly enough, I guess it was about maybe 3 years ago, he called me up and said, hey, I'm going to endow a scholarship at Clemson.
Wow.
I said, hey, that's cool. He said, so I'm going to give a full ride to a freshman, sophomore, junior, and senior.
Oh, my word.
You know, each, and when the freshman moves up to be a sophomore, there'll be a new freshman that I'll endow for. So endow, I don't know how much money. It's apparently a lot of money to endow that.
To
and he actually named it after me.
Oh, my gosh.
So that was really a flattering to me. So I got something in the mail probably 2 weeks ago saying who the student was that's getting to this next year. So
I was
flattered.
That's such a good story.
Yeah, he's a very, very nice guy. Very smart, too, in my opinion.
You'd have to be, yeah. So were you here when they created the PhD program?
I was.
Can you tell me a little bit about that?
I wasn't as involved in that as many of the other people were, so you'll find a lot more information from Joe than you would from me. I was still busy doing a lot of other things.
It sounds like it, yeah.
But I had one PhD student.
Okay.
So I was part of some of the committees that were deciding what you do and that type thing. But again, I was not as instrumental in forming that program as a lot of other people were.
Fair enough. So overall, what were your goals as when you were the department chair?
Well, I was department chair under two occasions. Joe took a sabbatical in 1985, I think it was. And so I became department chair. I don't remember exactly how. Was it a vote or just Joe said, hey, you're going to sit in this seat for about 9 months. In any event, I did take on that assignment in 1985 for a year while Joe was gone. And then I went on sabbatical in, I guess, 1998, 99. I went on sabbatical to El Salvador, doing a lot of work for in computer-aided manufacturing for apparel, since I had that, a lot of experience in El Salvador. And that was an interesting experience. I could spend a little bit of time talking about that if you're interested. But right after the Civil War, ended, a lot of guns, a lot of machetes. And so it was an interesting experience. But anyway, did a lot of work there. But while I was gone, Joe decided he did not want to be department chair any longer. And so he was going to just go back into the faculty. And so they apparently had a committee that met and considered people, and I got an email that said, hey, you're now department chair again for another year. So, oh, really? And so I wasn't here campaigning or anything else. I was in El Salvador. But I did take on that responsibility and for the 1999-2000 year. And that was enjoyable. I had a lot of good faculty. But my job was to find my replacement. So I worked really hard at that. And so... I managed to attract Pradeep Sharmani, who's still on the faculty here now, as department chair, and as well as a few other faculty members that we had that came in, you know, during that year.
And so, I will say that anytime we touch this desk, the mic will pick it up. So,
I'll be careful not.
No, it's fine. So, yeah, I do want to hear about El Salvador, actually.
Okay. Well, I went down there with a gentleman named Paul Sullivan, who was in Boston, who owned a manufacturing plant down there called Inkasa. As a graduate student at the time that I was working on my doctorate degree, you had to pass foreign languages, pay exams in two foreign languages. And so I knew that when I was an undergraduate, so I studied French and German. So as you might know, so when I came with my doctorate, the exams, I passed the exams, it works out. South Louisiana, there's a lot of Cajun French, so I kind of knew a little bit of French already, but I took 2 semesters of French and 4 semesters of German as an undergraduate. And so I passed the exams. But then I go to El Salvador, where they speak Spanish, and not having a, like I tell people, I learned my Spanish at Taco Bell. But when you get to a country and nobody's, that most of the people you're communicating with don't speak English, you pick up a language pretty quickly,
I'd say so.
particularly when you get hungry. And so I picked up some Spanish then, and I was able to communicate with the employees in the plant and, the management who didn't speak English and those types of things as well. Fortunately, Paul spoke English and Spanish both, so he helped me a lot. But and made a lot of good friends down there. That in fact, about 3 weeks ago, I had dinner with one of the people who was a manager down there, who was Salvadoreño, person living in El Salvador, who's now back in the States, and he married a lady from who had citizenship here, so he's now living in the States. But anyway, a lot of good memories down there. It's you're real careful about where you go and who you're with. Because, like I say, when you go to McDonald's and there's a guy guarding the door with a machete, make sure that, the bad guys don't come in. When you go out of the grocery store and there's a guy who with a sawed-off shotgun that walks you to your car, those
My
kind of
word.
things kind of make impressions on
I'd say so.
you.
You said you were working with textiles down there,
Yeah, apparel.
apparel. So can you tell me a little bit about the details of that work?
Sure. We did a lot of work in what we call real-time shop floor control. So we had devices at the sewing machines. And a lot of apparel pays piecework. The more you work, the more sewing you do, the more money you make. And so there's a bundle of collars, a bundle of fronts, a bundles of sleeves, whatever it might be, whatever the product might be. So they divide the garment into multiple garment types. There might be 50 collars all together in a bundle. And so a person sits there and sews 50 collars, stitches them, or maybe is a a side seam on a shirt or a pair of pants or whatever. And so you have to, they're to make a shirt, there are about close to 20 operations. And so a person does one operation on the entire bundle, and those bundles merge as they go downstream, and then they eventually make finished garments as they go through that process. Well, you have to track all that work to make sure that the stuff is flowing at the same rate, keep track of all of the things that each person is doing, because you want to pay them based upon what they did. So we had to write an incentive payroll system, which kept track of all of the stuff. But there's a little ticket, a card with a barcode on it that follows each bundle. So when a bundle arrives at a workstation, they scan the barcode on it, on a little device that's at the workstation. The device knows what operation they're doing. And knows who they are because they have to clock in the mornings. When they scan that barcode with that ticket, we call it, we know they're doing this operation on this type of this person on this bundle of garments that's associated with this size, this color, this style, of shirt or whatever you're making. And so we had to keep track of all the flow, keep track of all of the work that people were doing, tell management at high levels where things were happening so they could reassign people from one operation to another. There are unusual things that happen. A machine breaks. It's unfair to have the person being paid on a piece basis if they can't work because the machine's broken. So then you have to put them into an off-standard category, we call it, and then you start paying their average for the last 3 weeks, and it's pretty complicated.
It sounds complicated.
And so, but we put those systems in, and typically we would more than double their productivity because a lot of the time was spent doing paperwork, keeping track of what was going on versus sewing. So you get a lot of more productivity out of the people by using technology.
That sounds really interesting. So between when you started as a grad student to today, this is going to be a really broad question, and I'm sorry.
That's okay.
How have you seen the field of computer science change?
Well, the technology's clearly changed. the little computer that you have, I'm sure, someplace here. Maybe, you know, my phone.
Yeah.
Those are all the computers.
Right.
You know, there weren't such things back in those days. You know, there were big mainframe computers which cost millions of dollars and took up a lot of space and a lot of power. And, you know, and you ran one program at a time, typically. As a matter of fact, when I started, it was almost, it was closer to what we do today when I started than it was later on. We had what we call open shop.
Okay.
As a student,